Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a wild ride for the midterms. Big money, more than $2 billion spent on advertising. Big stakes, a clamoring Tea Party, energized Republicans, and frustrated independents threatening President Obama's Democratic majority. And loudly divergent ideas on the direction this country should take. It's a fork in the road. And next Tuesday, voters will have to decide. This hour On Point, the Tea Party, the Democrats, and next week's fork in the road. You can join the conversation. Are you getting out the vote for the Tea Party on Tuesday? Getting out the vote against it? Do you wonder how we'll bridge our divides after next week's voting? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in a moment from two young stalwarts, one Tea Party conservative, one progressive liberal, on the vote and the stakes. But first we go to one of the season's hottest races. John Ralston of the Las Vegas Sun joins us. He's a big interpreter of Nevada politics. And right now that means, above all, the race between Tea Party favorite Sharon Angle and Democratic Senate leader Harry Reid. John Ralston, welcome to On Point. Excuse me.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for being here, John. Give us the state of the race at this point. We'll look at what's moving voters there. But what does it look like? We're just days away now from the vote.
Well, most people think it's going to be very, very close, Tom. The thing about Nevada is we have early voting that started 11 days ago now, and probably 60 to 70% of the people are going to vote early.
Wow.
And it looks now like the Republicans are voting in slightly greater numbers than the Democrats, as they always do. The question is whether that so-called enthusiasm gap is going to beat the Democratic turnout machine, which is really what Harry Reid needs to continue his career.
What's the range of poll numbers showing at this point, John?
Well, almost every poll, public poll at least, that's been released in the last, say, 2 or 3 months has shown the race to be a dead heat. It's within 3 or 4 points either way. Most public polls show Sharon Angle with a slight lead now, but it is not statistically significant. And so it really does all come down to who's going out to the polls, and probably more than anything, how independents in this state vote. Independents 2 years ago went for the Democrats, as you know, here and elsewhere. They've now flipped, and most of them, or at least many of them, are going for the Republicans. Can Reid stave off that change? Does the Republican wave, the disappointment with the Democratic agenda that is here? We are the center in many ways of the economic crisis in this country. We have the highest unemployment rate, highest foreclosure crisis, and Reid is wearing a lot of that.
In terms of policy, position, attitude, what's working for Sharon Angle? What's working against her?
Well, so long as Sharon Angle is talking about the economy and talking about those figures I just mentioned to you, she does fine. It's when she has to talk essentially about things that she's said. And she has said some things that have gotten her into trouble. She said things to win a Republican primary that don't translate well to a general election. And so she's tried to massage some of those positions, including phasing out Medicare and Social Security. She has now tried to either pretend those positions never existed or try to say what I really meant to say. She's also made some very controversial comments in other areas, too, that Harry Reid has exploited, that he was actually behind by about 10 points when she won that primary in the beginning of June, and now he actually pulled even in midsummer by just running relentless commercials highlighting some things she said. As long as she's talking about anything but herself, she's doing fine.
John, in the national media, Sharon Angle, maybe not to the degree of Christine O'Donnell, but she's often presented as a kind of a hothead at the least and a nut job at the worst. How are Nevada voters looking at her? I guess they're not looking at her that way if you've got half or maybe more at this point in the polls, at least, lining up for her.
That's the interesting dynamic about this race, Tom, in the sense that Harry Reid had these just fantastically high negatives going into this race for a variety of different reasons, some of which I've mentioned. Economic crisis here. He's the face of the Democratic agenda here. He's been around for a long time, and he's also said a few intemperate things over the years. And so essentially anybody matched up against him on the ballot would have been competitive. And as I've said many times now, the real question is whether the Republicans have been able to nominate the one person in the state who could lose to Harry Reid this year. She is seen as a, to use your colloquialism, as a nut job by some people here because of some of the things she has said. On the other hand, there is such antipathy toward Harry Reid that they are willing to consider her, despite some of her comments and positions, as the lesser of two evils.
Where's Harry Reid turning for his strength, or what? You know, what's he pointing to try and rally votes?
Well, he is really, like as many Democrats are across the country, not running so much on his record as he is as essentially saying, listen, I can do a lot for this state, but even if you don't believe that, you can't go from 1 to 100 in the U.S. Senate. You can't put a backbencher in, and you certainly can't vote for this woman, this crazy, extreme, dangerous, they've used every adjective in the book to describe her. And so he is really making the lesser of two evils argument. I should tell your listeners that this isn't just a binary choice either. There are nine choices on the ballot, including something endemic to Nevada called none of these candidates,
wow,
which is part of Harry Reid's strategy. You can vote as a protest vote for none of the above, essentially, in Nevada in statewide races.
And he's encouraging that somehow?
He is not doing it overtly, but essentially his campaign has known, because of his high negatives, that he could only get up to a certain point. But he does have a political base, and let's say it's 44-45%. He has got to push Sharon Engel below that. The only way to do that is to get people to either hold their nose and vote for him, which is less likely than people just saying, I can't take either of these folks, I'm going to vote none of the above.
John Ralston, finally, how has Sharon Engel's Tea Party Association worked for or against her?
Well, the Tea Party Association enabled her to win the primary. She got a lot of outside money from Tea Party groups. And during the general election, in the third quarter, she raised an astonishing $14 million from across the country from Tea Party to, supporters and more opponents of Harry Reid. So to some extent, that has helped her become viable in this race.
John Ralston with the Las Vegas Sun joining us from Las Vegas. John, thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Now, the Tea Party Challenge and the National Fork in the Road. Joining us from Houston, Texas, is Ryan Hecker, an antitrust attorney in Houston, 29, former senior researcher for Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential campaign, a founding member of the Houston Tea Party Society, Harvard Law grad. He organized the Tea Party's Contract from America. We'll talk about it. Ryan Hecker, welcome to On Point.
It's great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
And with us from Washington is Matthew Iglesias, also 29, prominent liberal journalist, activist, author of the blog, prominent blog, thinkprogress.org. He's a fellow at the Center for American Progress. Matthew Iglesias, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be here.
It's great to have you both here. And Ryan, I want to look at your Contract from America. I have to ask you right off the bat, though, just because it's been so much in the news just in the last couple of days. Anybody online has seen these images of a liberal or anti-Rand Paul protester at the before the debates on Monday night, being pushed to the ground by Rand Paul supporters and her head being stepped on, stomped on, choose your verb. The Rand Paul campaign has said we're not for this, but we've seen pictures of the guy who did it with his arm around Rand Paul. What's going on here, Ryan? Why is this in American politics, and is it related to something in the Tea Party DNA?
I would say absolutely not related to something in the Tea Party DNA. I think that we've shown through now 2 years of kind of rallies and protests where there hasn't been, in most of them, a single arrest or anything along those lines, that we're not violent. I think that, you're going to have some people who are going to be aggressive in any election battle. And to say that that person's a Tea Party person just because they're voting for Rand Paul, would be wrongheaded.
Now, why is that? Isn't Rand Paul a big Tea Party favorite? I mean, if you support him, aren't you likely in the Tea Party? Isn't he kind of a, out front Tea Party face?
I mean, he's drawing support from a lot of people. I think he is getting, I think he does have a lot, he won the primary through Tea Party support, but, at some point, he's going to get over, it looks like he's going to win that election. It's going to be over 50%. And I'd say, there's a large percentage of people who are going to vote for him who are on the fringe as well, just like there are a lot of people who are going to support the Democrat who are on the fringe. And those people are, maybe more violent than not, but they're not. In my experience, I haven't met any violence in the Tea Party movement at all. I would hate for this one individual to be taken as some sort of condemnation of the Tea Party movement.
We'll look at that with Matthew Iglesias. But Ryan, at this point in this extraordinary midterm campaign, how are you feeling about the prospects for the Tea Party movement in the results next Tuesday?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. I think what it shows, and I think I hope that the Republicans get it, is that this is not a mandate for Republican control of Congress. I think this is a mandate for the principles behind the Tea Party movement, for economic conservatism and for transparency in government.
Matt Iglesias, it's not a mandate for Republican control. Do you agree?
Well, it's not per se a mandate for anything. What you're looking at is a very bleak economic situation. So the party in power is looking to lose ground. We'll probably get a small Republican majority in the House, probably a small Democratic majority in the Senate. Barack Obama is still going to be president of the United States. And, the question facing everyone in Washington is going to be, how do we go forward? How do we improve the economy? How do we grow jobs? You have a lot of people running for office with a lot of very extreme ideas that I think are not going to be constructive to that end. And they're not doing a lot to focus right now on realistic solutions to real problems. That's a campaign. I understand that. People are trying to win their elections. But, moving forward, I think there's a big blank spot around the agenda of a lot of these people.
We'll talk about what they're pushing for. Ryan Hecker's got his contract from America. But Ryan, very quickly before the break, If you're successful, it will be expressed, will it not, though, in a Republican majority, Tea Party or not?
Absolutely. But I think the real evidence of the success of the Tea Party movement comes after the Republicans, if they were to win, take Congress, and what agenda they push and whether they're going to be kept to what they've promised.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the midterm fork in the road. Tea Party, what, revolt versus the Democrats? Maybe versus Republicans, too. We will look at that. Ryan Hecker joins us today. He's with the Houston Tea Party, an activist there, founder of the Tea Party's Contract from America. We'll look at that. Matthew Iglesias is with us from Washington. He's at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, big political blogger, prominent liberal activist, voice maybe in this conversation for the Democrats. We'll look at that as well. A lot of big names out on the campaign trail saying, yes, indeed, it's a fork in the road. At a rally on Saturday, former vice presidential candidate, former Alaskan governor, Tea Party supporter Sarah Palin urged Florida Republicans to get out the vote ahead of midterm elections next week.
We have life and death choices coming up on November 2nd. Policies that are hinging on who it is that we send to Washington, D.C. and that we fill up our state houses with. This is paramount. This is the election, I think, of our lifetime.
Life and death, election of a lifetime. Here's President Obama last week in Portland, Oregon, looking to boost voter turnout for the midterms.
The only way to fight it, the only way to match millions of dollars in negative ads is with millions of voices of people who care and want to finish what we started in 2008.
And here's that little bit of that tough scene before a Kentucky Senate debate on Monday night between Tea Party candidate Rand Paul and Democrat Jack Conway. On Monday, some Paul supporters wrestled Lauren Valley, a MoveOn.org activist, to the ground. One, you can see it on the video, it's all over the web, stomped on her head, it looks like. The incident was caught on tape, created a kind of media firestorm. Get the police. Doesn't look good on video. A lot of people were very critical of Jack Conway's Aqua Buddha ad, Matt Iglesias, that took us all the way back to Rand Paul's college days. But let's just clear the air on this one first. Ryan says, the Tea Party's not about violence. That is a sad, brief exception. What do you say, Matt?
Well, the Tea Party is not primarily about violence, but what the Tea Party is about is a lot of really overblown rhetoric. We had Sarah Palin talking about, quote unquote, life and death issues. I watch, Glenn Beck many days talking about how Barack Obama is a Marxist. He's a communist. He's analogized constantly to Hitler, to Stalin. When you have people talking about death panels, these kind of, lies. very overblown talk, you know, it's naturally going to inspire some people to take it seriously. I mean, I understand that Sarah Palin is just a cynical and dishonest person, and that the same goes for Glenn Beck and for a lot of these entrepreneurs out there.
No cynical and dishonest Democrats?
No. I mean, I'm sure there are. But I mean, the point I'm making is that when people go out there and they compare the president of the United States to Adolf Hitler, when they say he's putting us on a road to totalitarianism, you have to take into account the fact that some people are going to take that seriously. I mean, right? If the country was actually being governed by Nazis and communists, the way Glenn Beck says, then you would have a very aggressive response to that, right? I mean, certainly I would. And you know, it leads to some of these kind of incidents. Now, I mean, I don't think that should be the focus of the campaign. The reality is we're electing senators, we're electing congressmen. Mm-hmm. They're going to come to Washington. They're going to, you know, vote on budgets. It's a little bit boring, but it's important. And we need to focus on what people stand for. I mean, Rand Paul, I think, does not stand for mob violence. But he has said that, you know, he opposes the Civil Rights Act. His view of economic conservatism means that, you know, he takes very extreme positions about Medicare, about the regulation of business, about the protection of the environment. And this is important stuff to talk about.
Ryan Hecker, we'll look at what's extreme and what's not. Take us to your kind of statement. I mean, this is your hallmark, the contract from America. Tell us about it. This is different than what John Boehner and the Republicans put out famously in Washington a month or two ago. This is very Tea Party-centric, kind of Web-centric. How did you build it? What does it say?
So the contract from America was built through I didn't write it. It was built through a user-submitted, crowdsourced process. So we had over 100,000 people debate and submit about 1,000 of ideas. We had a series of panels and kind of grassroots activists get together and narrow those ideas down to 21. And then we had an online vote, a transparent online vote from February to April 2010, in which 453,000 votes were cast, narrowing down that list of 21 to 10. And I think that, you know, our 10 points are very straightforward. I think they're really proactive reform, policies for real reform. And I think what's key is, you know, there are some similarities. I mean, I think the Republican pledge definitely copied a lot of what was in our document, which they've admitted to. But I think beyond that, I think the areas where they didn't are areas where we think that, you know, we really want to change the culture of Washington. And I think that that's really why a lot of Americans and a majority of Americans really, you know, see themselves as Tea Party supporters, or are more likely to support the Tea Party, is because I think they were sold a false bill of goods when Obama was elected. They were promised, I think, real kind of change in Washington culture away from lobbyist control towards transparency, and he failed to do that. I don't think they expected health care reform. I think they expected open government.
He called for health care reform in his campaign.
Yes, I think that the primary thing when he said change, when we have to change the face of government, what they were thinking about was transparency.
Ryan, begin to take us into your contract from America, if you would. 10 points, but at least get us started here.
Sure. One of the first point is to protect the Constitution, that every bill that's submitted needs to cite the area of the Constitution from which gives it its legitimacy. Number two is to reject cap and trade, is to, you know, both either overtly through Congress or any sort of backdoor, which would actually, you know, lead to, you know, real regulatory reform.
Cap and trade, that is what was intended to put some kind of lid on carbon emissions,
vis-a-vis
global warming.
Yes, and I think what that number two is really about is also, like, real regulatory reform to prevent, like, the EPA or someone else just to put through a regulation without any sort of Democratic vote that does exactly what Congress failed to do.
We had a Democratic vote, and we created the Clean Air Act, right, which says that there's going to be an Environmental Protection Agency, and it's going to prevent people, industrialists, from creating air pollution that's harmful to human life. The reason the EPA is looking at taking action against greenhouse gases is that it's a form of air pollution, which is exactly what they're supposed to be regulating. And look, I mean, if you want to say, fine, you know, you have a polluting power plant, you have a polluting factory, we just want you to run amok and sort of poison the air without regard to the consequences, that's great. But I mean, I think to come on the radio and posture that this is somehow an anti-lobbyist position is ridiculous. I mean, mean, at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, right, business lobbyists all over Washington, they're crossing their hearts. They're saying, you know what I really want? I really want these guys to get in and just let us pollute without regard. I mean, we remember when George W. Bush was president and we had lobbyists running the regulatory agencies. And now they're going to come back and it's going to be awesome.
Ryan Hecker, what do you say? Let's give Ryan a chance. We got it, Matt. Ryan, what do you say?
Matt, here's the problem, and this is a problem for the last, like, 20 years, both on the left and the right, is when you have bigger government, when you have the ability for, you know, the Clean Air Act led to how many regulations that were passed without the view of the average American having, you know, being transparent, like several thousand regulations. The new Dodd-Frank Act is expected to have something like 700, 800 regulations that are going to be passed. When things are done behind closed doors like that, it allows for big corporations to come in. So, for instance, with the cap and trade bill that was, you know, supposedly even transparent before Congress, I mean, it was partially written by companies like Alcoa, like Big Oil, who really benefited tremendously from it.
Let me ask you just on that point, if I may, you know, where big corporate money is. Is the Tea Party anti-big business? Is it for big business? Matt just kind of tied you to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, at least in the hopes for their members' hopes for outcome. Is that where you stand?
No, I would say absolutely not. We're for big business. I think that, you know, really what really spurred the Tea Party movement to get started was the vote on TARP, which bailed out, I mean, what, like massive corporations on Wall Street.
And then we had the rant on CNN that got people real excited from Rick Santelli talking about the Tea Party.
Yeah, I mean, I think TARP is really what drove a lot of people towards anger at both parties. And I think what it shows is that you know, look, big business is not aligned always with free market conservatism. When they can get, when they don't need to work hard to, you know, to work to succeed on the marketplace, and can instead easily get by just, you know, outspending their competitors with lobbyists to try to you know, influence regulations and congressmen. That's where the power is. And so the bigger the government you have, the more likely you have big business aligning themselves with kind of the governmental powers, which in this case are the pro-governmental powers, which in this case are the Democrats.
Ryan, let me ask you right there. One moment, please, Matt, if I may. But, Ryan, you've worked a lot with FreedomWorks, Dick Armey's group out of Texas, and I've seen you say it's been really helpful to the Tea Party group. And to this point, I mean, as I look back at the history, FreedomWorks kind of grew out of Citizens for a Sound Economy. It goes back to 1984, founded by the billionaires Charles David Koch. They've got their big Wichita-based petroleum conglomerate, Koch Industries, second largest privately held company in the U.S. Isn't that down in the root ball of the Tea Party, of FreedomWorks? Isn't that sort of part of your kit bag, Ryan?
First of all, Koch does not fund FreedomWorks. They haven't funded FreedomWorks for about, I'd say, 8 years at this point.
But didn't FreedomWorks grow out of their Citizens for a Sound Economy? Isn't that kind of
it? They grew out of, you know, I mean, I don't think we're going to get details, but a civil war between, you know, kind of split into two. And they receive, I mean, they do not, you know, they do not raise as much money as some of the other organizations in D.C. But what they're really, I mean, the people who work there, and every organization and every company, it's about the people who work there. And I have to say, I mean, the people who work there, Matt Kibbe, Brendan Steinhauser, Adam Brandon, the people who are actually, like, doing the hard work are real believers. And they really give credit when it's good, and they've been really good at bringing people together. And they're a great organization. As long as they're not controlled by their fundraisers, which they aren't, and they really believe in it, I'm totally on board.
Matt, you buying that?
Well, look, it's not a question of, you know, is the Tea Party subjectively for big business? The question is, you know, what's on the ballot in November? And you know, we don't need to guess as to what it is big business wants to happen. We can look at who they're giving money to, what ads they're running. And what they're doing is they're trying to get Republican candidates elected. They really want to see John Boehner as Speaker of the House. They really want to see Mitch McConnell as Majority Leader of the United States Senate. And it's not a secret why they do. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a very long memory to recall when Republicans were running the Congress. It was just 4 years ago. George Bush was president. Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, they were running the show.
But Ryan's saying, we do not want to go back there. This will be different.
Whether or not that's what Ryan wants, I mean, it's what's happening, right? The people haven't changed. There are no policy positions from the Bush era that they've disavowed. There's nothing that people were unhappy with before that they're want to turn over a new leaf over. It's the same old people coming in with the same ideas. And now you do have a new influx of sort of really kooky people who say, you know, well, we're going to just phase out Medicare. Now, that would be really different from what the Bush administration did. But, you know, it's not going to happen, and people aren't going to stand for it.
I'm going to come back to this issue of Bush policy and bring it to you, Ryan. I want to get to our listeners, if I may. Oleanne, New York. Mike, you're on the air, Mike.
Good day. How are you doing today?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, I'm a coffee guy in Western New York, and I also formed the Cattaraugus County Tea Party. My reasoning is the lack of adherence to the Constitution and the fiscal irresponsibility of our government. Small businesses in Western New York are hurting. It's easier for their employees to go get free Medi-Cal than to work. New York State is seriously hurting small businesses, and they're very concerned, and so am I.
If the Tea Party gains much bigger influence in Congress after next Tuesday, Mike, what do you hope for?
Well, my plan with the Tea Party and my local group is we're going to monitor any legislation that's taking place and keep an eye on our selected candidates and how they're voting and hold their feet to the fire, force them to stick to fiscal conservative adherence to the Constitution. That is my understanding. I've been to several Tea Party groups in New York. I've been to D.C. and Albany. We're very concerned about the direction of where our Constitution is going.
Mike, we hear it. Let me take that point right there to Ryan Hecker in Houston. Ryan, point three on your contract from America, demand a balanced budget, to Mike's point. And this is what you'd start a constitutional amendment process to require a balanced budget with a two-thirds majority for any tax hike. That would be a gigantic change in the way the federal government works. What are you hoping for there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're hoping that it changes the way government operates. I think the two other really big, bold ideas in the contract are fundamental tax reform, either a flat tax or a fair tax, and, you know, real simplification of the tax code, so to prevent sort of, you know, kind of lobbyists and big business coming in and getting all these tax credits and loopholes. And third, you know, real earmark reform, you know, a moratorium on all earmarks until the budget is balanced in a two-thirds majority for any earmark afterwards.
Let me ask you about a balanced budget. So you'd make it like the states that have to have balanced budgets, and what would happen in that case if we come to a moment where we need some big government spending to avoid a depression?
Well, again, I don't believe that. Well, I mean, I think we come from opposing fields. I don't think that you need big government spending to ever avoid depression. Often I think big government spending leads to depression. And so, you know, I think, yeah, what you need is real hard choices need to be made. You know, like, government has expanded tremendously under Bush and then under Obama. And, you know, we need to cut back and go back. And so in turn...
Let me just stay on that point, if I may, for a minute. What would that mean if we came... I mean, we've had depression in this country before. You know, economic cycles come. It could threaten the country again. Many say that it did at the end of the Bush administration. Are you saying if that came again, just bring it on, let it happen, it'll, you know, wash away the problems and we'll start over?
Government does not know. I mean, if the government was efficient in the marketplace, it would be doing a lot better now. Government is not efficient in the marketplace. In terms of, like, when the government spends big amounts of money in order to, like, stave off depression, it rarely, if ever, accomplishes that goal because it doesn't know where to spend its money in order to efficiently bring the economy back. I mean, I think the Federal Reserve is one of the biggest problems facing, you know, which has led to the recent recession. I mean, I think that their policies, they don't know what they're doing. We need to go back to real, you know, a solid, you know, monetary policy, and we need to go back to, and I don't think that we should just, you know, that the idea mm-hmm. that government can outspend and stop a depression is actually viable.
Most economists believe that. I mean, the sort of Keynesian view of the world, you know, maybe they're wrong. Matt Iglesias, this would be a revolutionary change. Balanced budget every year for the federal government, that's a revolution given where we are, have been.
Well, it absolutely is. And I mean, of course, the question is what kind of specific cutbacks would you have? I mean, to take the example of the gentleman from Western New York, you know, you have people are going along and then a recession hits. So economic activity goes down, tax revenue goes down, businesses are in trouble, even businesses that have done nothing wrong. You're running a store, but suddenly people have less money, you have fewer sales. With a balanced budget amendment, you would tack on to that. Suddenly, everyone's Social Security benefits would need to be cut. They would need to start losing their Medicare. We would have to stop repairing highways. It would make everything much worse.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a midterm fork in the road. Tea Party revolt, or call it what you will, versus the Democrats. Some of them are saying give the Democrats more time. With us from Houston, Texas, is Ryan Hecker. He is a Houston Tea Party activist, founder of the Tea Party's Contract from America. And if it's not up already, we'll get it up. We've got it up at our website, onpointradio.org. You can check it all out. He's a former senior researcher for Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential campaign, antitrust attorney there in Houston. And from Washington, Matthew Iglesias is with us, political blogger, prominent liberal activist. His blog is Think Progress. You can get to it at our website as well. He's a fellow at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We've got a lot of response online here. Here's from the web. Corey says, I'm not only rooting for a Republican / Tea Party avalanche in this election, I'm also secretly hoping Sarah Palin can pull it off in 2012. Then we've got Roseanne saying, how are Tea Party candidates running as Republicans? Why are they not running as their own party? We'll put that to Ryan. Here's Charles says, what's going on down here in Kentucky is downright scary. There's a revolution brewing and it has very strong roots here. I don't know exactly what shape that revolution is that Charles is scared of. Some people seem to want to bring on a kind of revolution here. Ryan, what about our question from Roseanne? Why are Tea Party candidates running as Republicans, not as Tea Party candidates?
I think primarily it's a matter of pragmatism. We have a two-party country. I mean, we don't have a parliamentary system. And so in a two-party kind of situation, you know, a third party would just split the votes between Republicans and Tea Party people, and would lead to probably a Democratic victory. It takes many years to start a third party, so a successful third party. And I don't think it's happened really in the last 100 years.
Matthew was saying earlier, he alleged that there's no, you know, sort of a disavowal of Bush-era policies by the Tea Party. What do you say to that?
That's completely not true. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why the Tea Party movement rose. It was less about Obama and much more about Bush.
Do you want to take away Bush's Medicare expansion? Take away prescription drugs from senior citizens?
I know the focus on Medicare, and I mean,
well, it's a good question, though. That was very costly.
He increased spending across the board. I mean, No Child Left Behind was an utter failure. He spoke about tax cuts, and I'm very happy for them.
Sure, but the single most expensive program he put forward, right, was a large grant of prescription drug benefits to senior citizens. And the base of the Republican Party, and frankly the base of the Tea Party movement and of modern American conservatism, is those very senior citizens. And I don't think that they are standing up there screaming and demanding for Medicare cuts. In fact, they're criticizing.
Ryan, what about it? The Tea Party position in Congress. I mean, it's just a few days to the election. It seems a reasonable question. If you want to cut costs and balance the budget, would you do it by getting rid of that drug
You're talking to one individual and what one individual would do. I think that, you know,
talking to a prominent Tea Party representative.
I would say that there are definitely, you know, there definitely needs to be entitlement reform in our country, that, you know, we're if you want to focus in the long term, we're at a point in like 20 years of complete collapse of that system, and something needs to be done. And I'd prefer an answer happens in the next few years than, you know, the day before. And I think that Matthew, I mean, you know, if he's going to be honest, has to agree, you know, intellectually that that's the case, that within 20 years, I mean, the system's collapsing and something needs to be done. So in terms of, you know, spending cuts, there might be need for reform and cutting out, you know, some of the excess there. But in terms of, you know, overall spending policy, I mean, I think that, you know, really, you know, Bush showed his true colors with TARP and then the automobile bailouts. I mean, he said something like, in times of economic crisis, you can't be a free market person. And that's just insane.
What do you think about the fact we saw just yesterday Ford is doing pretty great now? Many people say, of course, they didn't get the bailout, but if GM hadn't had it, the industry around Ford, many said, would have collapsed.
Many would say that. I mean, I would say that it would have helped Ford even more because they would have been able to. I mean, they were a successful business, and they would have been. I'm sorry, been able to compete. This is a global marketplace, not a national marketplace.
Yeah, Ryan, clear your throat there. Matt Iglesias, what about it? Ryan says, look, you're throwing this drug benefit cost on him. What about Democrats? What are they going to do about the giant deficits we've got and some structural problems down the road, some big ones?
Well, I mean, there are serious problems. And, you know, there was an effort made in this health reform bill to try to put Medicare on a sounder footing. It's partially successful in that regard. I think more does need to be done. But I mean, the point I wanted to make just by putting this on him is that it's very easy to sort of talk in loose terms about, quote unquote, big government and, quote unquote, spending. But what you see in the true face of, smart Tea Party leaders understand that what they're talking about means sharp cuts in popular programs, but they try to talk around that because the constituency that they've gotten very riled up, you know, it doesn't want to see Medicare go down. It doesn't want to see Social Security go down. I don't think they want to see teachers, police officers, firefighters in their communities laid off. But there's just no way to enact this program of giant tax cuts and giant spending cuts that doesn't involve taking away things that people really value and that are really important to their lives. I mean, we need to do reform, particularly on the healthcare system. That's what Democrats have been trying to do. Republicans saying they're going to repeal all this is going to make the deficit even bigger, even while it takes important protections away from people. So, you know, I mean, I think it would be helpful to sort of get real and get serious about long-term fiscal imbalances. But that means getting much more sensible on the tax side as well.
Let's go to our listeners. Denise in Columbia, South Carolina. Denise, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that I am up to my eyeballs in the hypocrisy of the Tea Party. I read recently where the Tea Party person in Texas said that they want to overthrow the government. They constantly, you've got Rand Paul talking about he would not vote for the voters' amendment for to have African Americans vote. You've got them constantly talking about they want to take back their country. They want to go back to the Constitution. The Constitution didn't have in it the rights and freedoms of African Americans and people of color. To me, what they want to do is go back to the 30s and 40s where African Americans were second-class citizens. And we are doing everything we can to make sure that our constituency knows that the Tea Party is basically people who cannot stand that you've got a person of color who is in this country trying to make it better. You gave Bush 8 years. He had two wars he didn't pay for. He put in the Medicare prescription plan. He didn't pay for that. He allowed Exxon and Cheney to go to secret meetings. And so now all of a sudden you got a Tea Party. It's all hypocrisy.
Denise,
so,
we got the perspective loud and clear. Let me bring it to Ryan. Ryan, what about Denise? Maybe one part of the heart of what she's saying there is about the take back the country incantation that we've heard from a lot of Tea Party people. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I think what it really means is that I'm going to say again, it's transparency in government. Is that we've really in the last like 30 years, even potentially even longer, have lost our way in terms of who is really controlling Washington. I think that people felt that Republicans used to be, at least economic conservatives felt that Republicans used to be their proxy. And then they weren't anymore. And the reason, and the question was why? Like, why are they not listening to us? And the reason is because the way Washington culture operates is you have an elitist kind of leadership that relies on lobbyist power. And so when we say take back the country, that's what we mean. We mean, and I want to to talk to the caller directly. I mean, this is not. I have never seen with my own eyes, and if I did, I would be I would be throwing them out. Racism in our movement. I think that you see.
Have you been to a lot of rallies, Ryan?
What?
Have you been to a lot of rallies?
I have been to a lot of rallies.
I mean, because maybe it's just what the press picks up on. But, we've seen plenty of posters and depictions of the president that looked pretty sketchy on the racism front.
No, you know what? I will say this. As a Jew, right, I would say that, Bush was compared to Adolf Hitler for 8 years. And so, I mean, it seems to be on the fringe, extremists try to portray anyone. Any leader that they disagree with as Adolf Hitler.
What about do you have people in your movement for whom take back the country means take it back from the racial diversity that's become quite
I would prominent? Say absolutely not. I mean, I think if you look at the Tea Party candidates around the country, you're going to see a lot of diversity. I mean, you see more African Americans running as Republicans now and winning and likely going to win their seats than any time before. I think, this is a party of ideas. Economic conservatism is something that really, the African-American community hasn't fully embraced yet. And it's tough. It's going to take many years, but it's an ideology. And so I think that that's really, you know, what this is about. But, I mean, you look at South Carolina with Tim Scott, you look at Marco Rubio, you look at, I mean, you know, you look at throughout the country, Francisco Canseco. You know, you're dealing with, a way that, you know, look, you know, we want to be more racially diverse. We want to be, you know, a more diverse movement. But it's a movement of ideas first. That's what's key.
We've got it. Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. And Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd just like to, first of all, say that I thought that the comment from a previous caller was very ignorant. I think it really undermines I think that the underlying impetus between a lot of the Tea Party candidates or Tea Party members, of which I'm not a member, but to create a boogeyman that somehow if you oppose Barack Obama, it's because he's black. You have to remember, this country elected a black president. The reason why he's so unpopular is because there's been a massive swing of independence. So did they all of a sudden become racist? I don't think so. You're going to always have a fringe of racist elements in the country. There are many racists in the Democratic Party who didn't come out to vote for Barack Obama, so that's where your racism exists in the country.
Mark, what do you think of the Tea Party push here, the things they're aiming for?
Well, here, so that wasn't even the point. The point I wanted to make was that I think that the point that's missed here is that people look, there are a lot of reasonable people in the Tea Party who, agree with what the Tea Party stands for in general with regards to fiscal responsibility, is that they see what's going on in the world. They see what's going on in Germany, or what's going on in Greece, France, England, and they see what's going on in our own country. You can look at models at the what's going on in California. Anywhere where you have liberal governments, you see massive overspending, unfunded liability.
Mark, let me ask you: Would the Tea Party help that? I mean, after all, it's going to be expressed in Republican candidates, and our deficit grew like Topsy during the Republican 8 years of George Bush.
That's what the Tea Party stands for. The Tea Party is trying to realign things the way they should be. They look at what's sustainable over the long run, and we know, there are a lot of reasonable people that look at how they live their own lives. We know that if we overspend, we can't afford. I about went bankrupt going through all of my schooling and medical school and et cetera.
Yeah.
I about went bankrupt because I couldn't pay the interest on my credit cards. I needed to do it in order to survive.
Mark, we've got the perspective, and I appreciate it very much. Matt Iglesias, you know, there's a guy out there like a lot of Americans, you know, trying to pay for his education, trying to make a living, almost going bankrupt. That is not an uncommon story now. And he points to frustrated independents and says, you know, come on, they elected Barack Obama, and a lot of them are now, you know, really wondering what's going on, maybe looking at the Tea Party. I mean, it's hard to deny the pain that he's pointing to there, and you see where he's looking for an answer. Do you think Democrats are adequately answering that? Is it just a matter of needing more time? What?
Well, I mean, absolutely not. I mean, the reason we're seeing this political swing against Democrats is precisely because the pain is very real and because the approaches of Barack Obama and the Congress have not yet been adequate to solve these problems. But we should remember, you know, where these problems come from. We don't need to get wild hypotheticals about what Republican management of the economy leads to. I mean, that's how we got into this situation in the first place. It's completely fair to say that Obama and the Congress have not dug us out of this hole as quickly as I would like to see. But, you know, they have been digging us out of the hole. And the fact of the matter is that this is a competition of ideas. And you have to ask yourself, are these ideas going to help people who are in bad economic situations? Is it going to help unemployed people to cut off their benefits, to cut their student loans, to reduce Social Security and Medicare so that people can't afford to shop in stores, so people can't see the doctor? I don't think that will help. I think that going back to the policies that got us in this place would be a huge mistake. But I completely understand that people are frustrated with the status quo. The situation in America right now is not a good one. So it's natural that the opposition is gaining strength.
Ryan Hecker, who should people listen to understand what the Tea Party really wants? You know, it's famously kind of diffuse, though it comes together at certain points. As you say, FreedomWorks has been very Dick Armey's outfit, been very helpful to a lot of these groups behind the scenes. But, for example, here I've got a web comment from Jim. He says, as someone who's been involved in GOP politics since the mid-1970s, I find this current crowd running the show, Palin, Beck, Dement, frightening. This crowd is truly the far radical right fringe squandering the legacy of Goldwater, Reagan, and Kemp. Where should people look, Ryan? Should they look to Sarah Palin, Jim Dement, Glenn Beck? Where?
Well, I mean, I think that that's the thing with the Tea Party movement is that it's so diverse, it's hard to put a finger on who's leading it, and that's a good thing.
Is it? I mean, what if you think it's one guy and it turns out to be somebody else? I mean,
yeah, there is no one guy, and that's what, and anyone who claims that they're the guy is not the guy.
Okay, one idea or set of ideas, and you know, is there a sort of buying a pig in a poke problem here? You're not sure what you're going to get.
Well, I mean, I'd start with the Contract from America. You know, we've had, I mean, I think, you know, massive support. We have over, 300 groups that are aligned with the contract. You know, I'd say that generally individuals or, listeners should go to their local Tea Party groups and ask them what they stand for. You know, from a national perspective, I think that I find it kind of a little fun that the media doesn't really know how to define the movement, and that's what's so great about it is that you know, it's a very individualistic movement. It's almost a movement that is based, and the way it's structured is very similar to the ideas that it espouses.
You were with Rudy Giuliani's big presidential campaign in 2008, a senior researcher there. How different is this effort from that, Ryan?
Well, you know, I think Giuliani was a fantastic economic conservative, and I think he really showed that New York City that conservative economic fiscal policies can turn a city around, and you don't need big liberal government spending, I think that there's differences in the fact that this isn't about one candidate, it's about the ideas. When people are voting for the Republican in the current election, they're not voting for the Republican. They're voting for the movement, and that's really how Barack Obama got elected. I mean, people felt like they weren't voting for Barack Obama, but they were voting for the movement.
Matt, what do you say? It's about ideas. Never mind the specific name on the ballot.
It is about ideas. It's about bad ideas.
I think Matt's kind of off when he says Obama's trying to fix the problem. Obama's increased government spending, so much more in 2 years than Bush did in 2 years. He's going to. I mean, he's
he
not
had an economic collapse in his lap, but maybe, maybe you would have gone a different way. And we hear that today. It's very clear. It's right in the Contract from America. Listeners, you can read it at our website and decide for yourself. Ryan Hecker with the Tea Party in Houston. Thank you for joining us, Ryan.
Thank you.
Matthew Iglesias with the Think Progress blog. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.